It's been a busy week in the world of media. Steve Bannon leaves the right-wing Breitbart, as do investors. President Trump says he wants tougher libel laws after a disparaging book is published about him. NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik is here to take a look. Hi, David.
Hi, it's been bananas of a week.
It has, hasn't it? But there's also the news that you broke, and we want to start there. That is that James Rosen, one of Fox's top D.C. reporters and a legendary reporter in his own right, left the network quietly after repeat harassment claims that the network seemed to know about for a while. No on-air announcement. First of all, you spoke to many of his former colleagues. What more can you tell us?
Well, I want to be clear. In one of the three cases of an explicit sexual harassment alleged by the eight colleagues that I talked to, one of those, there was a complaint made. In two others, they weren't, in part because at least in the first case, I'm told that the person, the woman who experienced it, thought that it was sadly almost par for the course, and this was the culture. What I would say is that Fox, you know, corporately was not informed about these things. But you're talking about three incidents. In one case, back in the winter of 2001-2002, Rosen, in a cab back from a meal, groped an equal, a peer of another reporter who was female. He grabbed her breast. In a second case, there's less details known, but a producer working for the network at the, covering in the State Department complained of harassment. In order to get around any public kind of complaint, worked out a deal to extend her visa so she could continue to work in this country. She was a foreign national at the time.
Well, I just want to jump in there. I just want to jump in there to say before you go to the third one, this was a deal with Fox, and that seems particularly odd because you could say that the Fox News Network, at least, is very much against that kind of deal for immigrants. But in it looks like in exchange for her not making her complaint public, they extended her stay in the U.S.
You might see that as an ideological thing. She's from Britain, so you could argue that, that they have less problem with people here being here from the UK. But it is utterly consistent with the network's pattern from its founding CEO and chairman of settling one thing after another, paying things out or arranging things to take care of prominent male figures at the network to insulate them from allegations, including and especially that founding CEO and chairman himself, Roger Ailes. The third incident involving James Rosen was very recent. It was late last spring. It involved a junior female reporter, not nearly as experienced as Rosen. He tried to kiss her in an elevator on the way back from a meal, and when she rebuffed him, he forcibly tried to kiss her a second time. And these were instances where people described and said, you know, James was a particularly aggressive in flirting, but at other times things were outright harassment. Yeah.
Look, almost every network has been touched by these sexual harassment claims, including NPR. But Fox, you could say, started the wave and has struggled to get out from under the shadow of its former chief executive, the late Roger Ailes, accused by more than two dozen women, or Bill O'Reilly for that matter. And what seems to be problematic here is that Fox chair Rupert Murdoch in mid-December said this to Sky News.
There was a problem with our chief executive, over the years, but isolated instance. As soon as we investigated, he was out of the place in hours. Well, 3 or 4 days. There's been nothing else since then.
It was actually that Ailes was out in 13 days, but that there's been nothing else since then. How does that square with what we know about when Rosen left?
Virtually nothing out of Murdoch's mouth was true. I want to be very clear. I don't know if he convinced himself it was true or he knew that he was saying something that was false. But nothing that came out of his mouth in that segment is right. Ailes was, Fox News paid off $3 million to settle a case where a woman alleged that he had coerced sex from her for more than a decade in a very troubling case that was alleged back in 2011. Bill O'Reilly paid off many millions of dollars, high eight figures, high seven figures, I should say, in order to settle the claims of a producer, Andrea Macris, who had sued him in court. And that was over a decade ago. O'Reilly has repeatedly paid off. Most recently, we learned last year of a case in which he agreed to pay $32 million to a former Fox contributor to settle her claim that she was going to file a lawsuit if he didn't settle it, alleging a non-consensual sex. Now, that sounds a lot like rape to a lot of people. We don't know more about the details than that. But an executive, Francisco Cortez, was fired after allegations that he had tried to force a woman to perform oral sex on him. I mean, there's just very troubling stuff. And let's remember, these acts were perpetrated against people working for Fox News. Mm. You know, this is a culture that Fox executives privately say right now, look, we're working hard to reverse a somewhat sadistic culture, a controlling culture, a dysfunctional culture that was built up for two decades by Roger Ailes. We're trying to reverse it now. It's going to take time. They would argue that James Rosen's ouster, even if quietly done at the end of the year toward Christmas, is example of proof that they're working to do that. People there say, you know, what took them so long?
Yeah. I want to ask you about Steve Bannon, of course, stepping down as executive chair of Breitbart News because of all the comments that he made in the Fire and Fury book and the Fire and Fury that came at him from the White House and President Trump, but also because investors just were fleeing Breitbart. What does he do now?
You know, what he's going to do is look for another billionaire patron. The Mercer family had been major backers of the Breitbart and its iteration under Bannon, Steve Bannon, after the death of its founder, Andrew Breitbart. Bannon took it more nationalistic. He made it even more incendiary and more conservative than it already was. And he was in returning from the White House, he'd clearly gotten the political taste in his mouth of wanting to be a kingmaker in politics. You know, he dabbled in that Alabama Senate race and screwed it up for the Republicans, ensuring Roy Moore would be the candidate, and he went down in flames to the Democrat there, a surprise victory for the Democrats. The Mercers have pulled away from him. It seemed to damage their brand in finance. Robert Mercer basically resigning major role at this huge fund that he helped to lead. His daughter denouncing Bannon, although she is one of the controlling owners of Breitbart. He's going to have to find a new patron. Otherwise, I think he's very much alone in the wilderness right now. I think that, you know, you're seeing Bannon's fever dreams of being able to create a new, much more nationalist Republican Party and to prop up that wing against the Mitch McConnells of the world, the establishment Republicans. But I'm having trouble seeing it.
And what about Breitbart? It had become, you know, a home to white supremacists, as you said, nationalists. It also was, a conservative voice. What happened to Breitbart?
I mean, Breitbart, under Bannon, Breitbart flirted with racism and not just flirtation at times, misogyny, homophobia, anti-immigrant, real bashing there, really even more problematic and incendiary than it had been before. And what Breitbart as an institution on the Mercers has done is sided with Trump against Bannon in the wake of this just flagrant split in the Michael Wolff's book. But it's hard to know where they go right now. I mean, they can be adamantly pro-Trump, but they seem to be weak without their propelling engine, that Bannon, that role that Bannon has served for them. In the last week, they seemed immobilized in covering the Michael Wolff's book and the fallout of the Bannon-Trump split. They now have another path, but they're not trashing Bannon. It's not clear to me whether they are going to capture the pro-Trump voice in the way that they have for the past, call it, 2 years, or whether they may be supplanted by other new fighters. We weren't talking about Breitbart this centrally, 3-4 years ago in the political discourse, not quite as much. We may not be again in the years to come.
It's so interesting. President Trump maybe was vaulted to power by Breitbart, and now he takes it down. I got to ask you real quick. The Washington Post, celebrating its second consecutive year as a profitable company, hiring more people, expanding office space, record subscription numbers. What are they doing right? They have a good movie about them, but what are they doing right?
Well, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep aside, I think it's always a good business strategy to be owned by one of the richest people ever to walk the earth. Jeff Bezos picked them up and gave them incredible lead time, headspace, and funds to figure out what to do. That said, they've done two things. They've really, bet a lot of money on the idea of using the analytics, which fueled so much of Jeff Bezos's fortunes at Amazon, and applying it to digital usage. They put a paywall in place. And what they've really done is invest a lot of money in a lot of quality as well as a lot of content. Yes, they do a lot of duplicate posts on interesting things, but they have hired a lot of smart, intense, tough, good journalists. And at a time when accountability journalism has never been more important, they're providing it. I think the quality of what they've done has meant that people value them and that they're willing to pay for it digitally as well as in print. And that is helping to sustain them as well.
David, we're going to have you come back to talk about President Trump's calls for tougher libel laws. But just in the seconds we have, do you think that'll happen?
I don't. I think this is a rhetorical device for the president. Yeah. It's not really a federal issue. It's one he likes to do, but it does encourage others here and abroad to make attacks on the press.
David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent. David, thank you.
You bet.